Welcome to The Procurement Show.
Hello and welcome to The Procurement Show, the show that tackles the topics we all need to think about and sets out to explore the more interesting bits of procurement. I'm Jonathan O'Brien.
And I'm Paul Philpott, and apparently I'm washing your car this weekend.
For the second time. This week we're exploring what the C-suite expect from procurement in a world in crisis.
The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, enabling the future of procurement in organisations around the globe.
And to help here, our guest has worked as a procurement practitioner since 1988. He's been CPO for a number of different companies, including the NHS here in the UK, Auto Trader, Transport for London as well. He was instrumental in the evolution of the Oyster card system in London to become the tap-and-go system that it is today on the London subway system. And he holds a master's degree in strategic procurement from the University of South Wales. He's VP for SAP in Melbourne, and he works with the Economist Impact on the Procurement Imperative Research Series, which has produced over 10 papers in the past 4 years. Today, he's here to talk about the latest paper. Will you please welcome to The Procurement Show, Gordon Donovan. Gordon, it's a pleasure that you could join us today. Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good. Pleasure to be here. Thanks very much. And hello to both of you.
All the way from Melbourne. I think this is the furthest distance that we've done a procurement show.
That's quite good, because we always make that joke that the other side is upside down.
Yes, but he looks okay.
He does, yeah. But then we'll be upside down to him.
The water does go down the drain the other way.
Yeah, yeah.
And the key, when you turn the key in the lock, it actually turns the other way. Which is very bizarre.
I could cope with the water. I couldn't cope with the key.
I've lived here for 20 years. I'm originally obviously from the UK.
Yeah.
There are two things that I still haven't figured out properly yet. One is the key going the wrong way. And two, Christmas. We're recording this end of October.
Yeah.
And Christmas is around the corner and people are getting excited for Christmas. My wife, who's Australian, turns around and goes, oh, you can tell Christmas is coming because it's getting warmer.
That's just wrong.
But I've not experienced that.
I keep saying, you know, the song says Jack Frost nipping at your nose.
Yeah.
Down under, he doesn't.
One day I'm going to do Christmas in Australia. Just want to do that Barbie thing.
Yeah.
One day. So in your latest paper, The Resilient Edge, Procurement in an Era of Polycrisis, you've surveyed over 2,000 C-suite executives and asked about their key challenges, priorities and expectations for the procurement function. And there are some interesting results in there, which is why we wanted to get you on the show. So let's get straight into this. What does the C-suite want from procurement?
The short answer to that is a better approach to risk and resilience. The whole ethos of the papers and the research is there are a number of papers out there, all very, very good, that ask procurement people about procurement. And they're great and they're fantastic and people should read them and think about what they say. What we wanted to do at SAP when we were partnering with The Economist was to ensure that we got the broadest possible understanding of where the business and what the business want from procurement. That's why we were really clear to go, well, sure, we're absolutely going to talk to CPOs. We must also talk to CFOs, COOs, chief supply chain officers, chief HR officers. And what that gives us is a really holistic view, because this isn't going to surprise people. Not every C-suite agrees with each other about certain things. You'd be actually surprised at how much they do agree with, but there are some notable differences. In this year's paper, and they say that there were over 2,000 this year, 2,000 last year, the big thing was around risk. When we were asking confidence questions, what's the level of confidence that the C-suite has in procurement across a whole range of different activities? And for certain things, it's good. And other things, you'd go, oh, that's interesting. You would think it would be a little bit better. And one of those areas, the confidence was a little lower. It was around early 20%, was risk strategies for category strategies in category management. So overall, the category management was about 50% were confident and 35% were somewhat confident. And then there was a degree of people who weren't confident at all in procurement's ability to execute category management. But the big issue with it was the value that people got from it. And where they were wanting a better approach was risk, as understanding specific risk strategies. So that, I think, was certainly one of them, because I think essentially previously it'd been focused on delivering savings, and the ratio of category strategy to sourcing exercise was probably very close to one-to-one. And I think, as we know, we want to explore the myriad of other ways from an execution perspective that a category strategy needs to be executed. So I think that was one thing. I think if we look at the organizational risk areas the C-suite wanted procurement to look at, we saw some consistency. So we always ask the question, what do the next 18 months look like? What does the next 5 years look like? So that we can see what the short-term, long-term piece is. Short-term geopolitical dynamics was the biggest area, and not surprising, right? I mean, you know, I think we've been in disruption for a long period of time, the current manifestation of which has been driven an awful lot by the geopolitics. So we see geopolitics, we see sustainability as being a key risk, and AI. So whilst AI is clearly a massive opportunity for organizations, it's also seen as a big risk.
Yeah.
So that AI strategy, AI integration is something that I think is critical for us to understand from a risk perspective as well. So overall, I'd say one of the big things was what the C-suite are looking for is for procurement to take a much greater interest in the broader risks and specifically what it means for categories and category strategies and how they're going to manage that.
Does procurement really understand, and I'm going to use the word crisis, really understand the crisis that we're in? And actually, I'm going to ask Jonathan, first of all, for his evaluation on this. Is crisis the right reference?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're in a world in crisis in for many reasons, and I think procurement's in crisis right now. So it's a great question.
And do we understand what's happening here?
Well, I've got two answers for that. Yes and no.
Brilliant.
It's almost like
that's it.
Job done, end of show. Yeah.
So yes, I think procurement understands, because in many ways, certainly back when I was a practitioner and a CPO and talking to my peers who are CPOs, and for a long time, procurement has always seen itself as something that delivers much greater than cost savings. If only. We want to get involved in risk and, it's everyone else who won't allow us to do all those kind of things. Now, I'm not saying that that's true, but I'm saying that's probably a feeling, because I think the focus has traditionally been cost. Now, well, interestingly, and that word's doing a lot of heavy lifting, but interestingly, one of the things that we've been tracking is the procurement reporting line. And we've seen it over the 4 years that we've been doing this evolve from being relatively close between COO and CFO to now being primarily COO. So 46% of this year's respondents reported to the COO compared to like 23% who reported to the CFO. Now, what I think that does is it changes the focus of what procurement does. So instead of it being very finance-driven, because that's essentially where its masters were, it's now operationally driven. And operations are traditionally much more focused on risk and resilience and ensuring that they have stuff, you know, in a manufacturing basis that goes into the final product or in any other basis as well. They're much more focused on resilience and risk. One of the questions that we had this year, and this is a bit of a hangover, I think, from when procurement largely reported to finance, was what's procurement's primary value proposition? So he said, you can only choose one. So all the other rest of the survey questions say, what are your top two? What are your top three? Or rank or what have you? For this one, it was like, you've got one choice. We'll paraphrase Monty Python. What has procurement ever done for you? And 43% said cost management.
Yeah.
None of us on this virtual table or physical table or sound booth are surprised with that answer.
Yep.
Maybe we're surprised that it's only 43%. I think if we'd have asked this question 3, 4, 5 years ago, I think it would be more likely to be 60%.
Yeah, agreed.
I think I'm going to be asking this question every year that we'll be doing this, and I'm going to track to see where it goes. My guess is that it will slowly go down and down and down. I'm not necessarily worried that the primary value proposition is cost. I don't think procurement's ever going to get away from being someone seen as cost. I think it's ingrained into what we do, into the processes that we have. Okay, AI may fundamentally change those processes, but I think it's ingrained. And I think there's that level of expectation. The issue for me was, what's the second? What finished second? And I would have hoped that it would have been category strategies. And it wasn't. Like, less than 9% of the 2,000 respondents selected category strategies. The number two was very diffused across four or five different things. Digitization was actually the second one at about 15%. So you see that delta. 43% said cost management, 15% said digitalization. That's a big gap, right? It's not close. So I would hope that if we are focused on risk, if we truly get it, then the focus on category strategies and the risk piece will go up. Whether it ever goes above cost management as the primary value proposition, I don't know. I'd be surprised if it ever supplants it. I would hope at some stage it's going to be, this is very industry focused. Or very geographically focused. So the less mature and this came through in this year's study, because I break this down via country and via region and via industry, because we have statistical significance at every level. That's why we get 2,000 people, so that I can break it down. Mm-hmm. The more mature countries weren't as focused on cost. It was still the primary value proposition by a good 15%, but you saw those numbers drop. The less mature were much more focused on cost, like 65, 70% in some countries.
And now it's time for this week's fun fact.
David H. McConnell, the founder of Avon, initially sold books door to door. In order to attract customers, he started to offer perfume as a freebie, and he noticed that many of his female customers were natural salespeople, so he began hiring them to sell his products, which eventually led to the company's focus on cosmetics. The rest is Avon calling history.
Did you hear a doorbell there?
Look, if I push this, look. It happened.
Wow.
The fun fact. Contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com, or connect with us on LinkedIn. Search for The Procurement Show. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, the first choice for advanced procurement and negotiation training.
So if risk is one of the key things that the C-suite is looking for, I mean, that's no surprise. And it's no surprise that cost is right up there as well in terms of the areas of focus. But does the C-suite think procurement is navigating the risk well?
No, that's the bit that when I turned around and said, do you have confidence in procurement managing and performing these risk strategies for specific categories? No, that's an area that we need to do better at. That, okay. That came through very clearly. And if we look at the broader things around procurement's ability to manage global risks, the confidence figure was around about 60%. Mm-hmm. Now, that was up from last year, which was significantly down from the year before. So it's kind of almost got back to where it was 2 years ago when we took this. So there's still, I think, some work to do in our ability to manage risk. And the reason why it dropped 12 months ago was actually relatively clear, was inflation. And whilst I don't think the business was saying, oh, procurement, we're paying much more because you haven't done your job very well. But I think it's one of those, inflation and high interest rates are predictable to a degree. It's not like they've never happened before in our lifetime.
Yeah.
The lack of scenario planning was the issue to that, because we hadn't necessarily thought about, well, what if interest rates go up through the roof? What are the indicators that interest rates might go up? What are the indicators that inflation might happen? What are the causes of inflation? And if we've done our studies, we know about supply and demand curves, and therefore the impact of demand growth and supply constriction and what that does to prices. And therefore, when prices go up, inflation goes up. And the only method, for whatever reason, and I'm not an economist, but the only method that seems to control rampant inflation is high interest rates, is whacking interest rates up. Convinced there are other ways, but clearly wrong, because that's the only lever that people seem to pull. So it's not like it hasn't happened before. And it's not like we couldn't see that this was a possible outcome. And whether or not we graded it as a 50% higher or lower outcome, the issue when I speak to some of the C-suite was, shouldn't we have planned for this?
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You're hitting on something really important here, because I see that procurement teams, if they're doing well, they're great at doing the risk assessment in terms of what if that supplier fails? What if that supply chain has issues? But they don't think about the macroeconomic stuff around, if inflation rises, this is how it's going to affect our supply chain costs. This is what we do about it. That level of planning just doesn't happen. I don't think in procurement we think enough about the economic drivers, because as you say, we can predict this stuff. Economists do it all the time. But in procurement, there are very few economists, which is a strange thing. But because we have very few economists, we don't do that thinking.
Would you say procurement very much lives in the moment?
I think in those terms, yes. In terms of risk for supply chain outages, I think we're pretty much on that. But I think in terms of understanding the bigger picture and planning and having contingencies in place, that's a level of thinking I don't see many procurement functions doing.
Gordon, early when you were talking about the evaluation of the role of procurement, and 43% was your headline figure, how can procurement prove that it can bring more to the table other than the basic cost savings as its primary objective? Yeah. Because I think it genuinely is able to bring more to the business.
Oh, I think there are two things that would jump out at me. One is exactly what Jonathan was just saying. Now, in order to do that level of analysis, that level of strategic thinking, there are a number of things that need to happen in order for that to work. And the first thing is we've got to stop doing some stuff that we do now. The reason why we don't do that level of thinking, or one of the reasons why we don't do that level of thinking, is that I think we are too focused sometimes on the execution of strategies rather than the actual creation of strategies. I was having this conversation earlier with a colleague of mine, and I always say this line, and it annoys some people, and it makes other people chuckle. There is nothing strategic about sourcing. Sourcing is an execution of a strategy.
Yeah.
The execution of a strategy, let someone else automate it. Mm-hmm. I know I work for a technology company, so you could say I'm biased, yeah. And yes, I probably am. One of the reasons why I'm working for a technology company is I believe in technology. Automate it. There is so much stuff that can be automated. For whatever reason, we seem to cling on to. And I would like us to let that go and think about the strategy. And there's a lot of CPOs that I know that have started to do, they've actually turned around and gone, I can't get my category managers to get out of the execution of a sourcing exercise, be it a tender or an RFQ, whatever it is. So in order to stop them, and that's largely because where they came from was running sourcing events, right?
Yeah.
This isn't an issue on the individual. This is just how, you know, where we get people from. So in order to do that, I'm going to whacking big line down the middle of it. Your job is to create the strategy. It's not to execute the strategy. The execution, I'm either going to automate, I'm going to outsource, I'm going to put offshore, I'm going to do something else. I'm going to create another team, and their job is to create source. Now, that works for really big procurement companies. Yeah, they've got the ability to do that. What I'm hoping happens is with this embrace of digital first, with AI second, we start thinking about what we can automate using both of those. Because the original automation stuff, the trad AI, if you like, is there and can be used.
Yeah.
And we should be embracing as much of that as possible because we need to free up our time. I read the Hackett Key Issues report every year, and SAP sponsored this year, and I believe we're sponsoring it next year. So I get to see it quite early, which is good. I haven't seen this year's yet because I haven't finished writing it, but I remember seeing last year's and the years before and the years before that. And it's the same line pretty much every year, which is there is a productivity gap in procurement. Workload is going up either because of volume of work, which is good news because we're being asked to do more, but also more because the complexity of the work, because of the world that we're living in now, is significantly more complex than it's ever been before. And it's only going to get more complex because we have a greater level of uncertainty about what's going to happen next. That's what's driving the complexity. So the workload's going up. Of course, the headcount is not going up. In fact, I read a report last week, and it was the first time I'd seen that people are expecting headcounts to be reduced.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen that.
That was the first one that I'd seen that actually come out and said that, which is like, okay, that's interesting. I mean, you could argue that's the impact of AI, but you could also argue that's the impact of other things. So that productivity gap is only going to get bigger. So in order to focus on the work that really matters, the strategy work, the deep analysis, we need to do two things. One is to let go of the traditional things that we've been doing and find ways to use technology to drive an awful lot of that. And the second thing is to use technology to help generate, if we want to use generative AI, and figure out how we're going to use AI to assist and augment the work that we do. You know, I used to teach and do a lot of training for SIPs. I used to teach people how to do a Porter's Five Forces broader market analysis, but very useful tool as long as you also ask the so what question at the end of it and figure out the trends and all the rest of that kind of stuff. And I'd say to do that properly, you need to speak to an awful lot of people, you need to crunch a lot of stuff, you need to read stuff. You can do that. You can get a passable one with AI in about 15 minutes now.
Yeah.
And what you're doing is validating that rather than creating it. And that's a real different piece.
We'll be right back in just a moment.
Strategic thinking, category management, negotiation, SRM, sustainable procurement.
Imagine if the skill set your team needs could happen at the flick of a switch. At Positive Purchasing, we have 22 years' experience in building advanced procurement and negotiation capability. With our unique skills assessment and tailored learning and development programs, it's no wonder we're the partner of choice for big companies the world over. Ready to switch on procurement capability that makes an impact in your business? Contact Positive Purchasing today to find out how.
The Procurement Show with Jonathan O'Brien.
Yeah. I need to bring Jonathan in here because one thing you mentioned earlier about the increase of complexity going up, I'm still sometimes of the opinion when it comes to that, that procurement is pretty much its own worst enemy.
Yeah, I think it is. And what you're talking about, Gordon, in terms of, you know, let's get the tactical stuff, the transaction stuff, automated business self-serve. You know, we talked about that when we had Guy Strafford come on the podcast, how the tech and the AI is going to drive that stuff. So I think we're going to naturally see this. That stuff's just going to go. Even if procurement tried to hold on to it, they're going to lose that because the organization's going to wrestle it off us because there'll be the tech that will do that stuff. So our only choice is to focus more strategically. And I work with so many companies that say, hey, we're doing category management. And you look at it and no, you're running RFPs and then you're putting a contract in place. That is not strategic. And I think one of the challenges we've got, we've lost sight of what good strategic procurement is because we're too busy thinking it's about the executional piece. So I think that will change.
I completely agree. I think what's happened over years, if we think back to what we might say is tactical procurement, which was buying, right? It was requisition, purchase orders, and P2P in my sort of world, right?
Yeah.
We always consider that tactical buying and, we absolutely want to apply technology. And I was reading, I think, a PwC report a year or so ago, and it said something like 96% of organizations that they surveyed, it was about 800 people that they surveyed, had got P2P systems in some form or other. Now, whether they've done them well or not is a separate issue, right? But they've kind of done that. So in many ways, what I think we're talking about is the shifting of what tactical actually is.
Sure.
From the traditional downstream buying, purchasing kind of thing to actually, no, sourcing is tactical. The execution of strategy is tactical. Mm-hmm. The creation of strategy is where we need to be.
Yeah.
And that's the bit where I think we can add huge amounts of value, linking back to risk. And I said there were two things. So absolutely focusing on releasing some of that stuff, unlearning, if you like, the years of learning that we've had. But the other thing I'd say that we need to think about is, I'm calling it customer centricity because it's a nice buzzword and I work in marketing. But what I mean with this is, there are reasons why our company's customers buy from our company. So I'm not talking about internal customers. I'm talking about the people who actually buy the products or services that we're producing, both public sector or private sector. There are reasons why people buy from our company. What are they?
Mm.
And then the thing that you're buying, how does it contribute to the reasons why those customers actually buy from you? I think if we start to think about that, when we segment our goods and services that we buy and think about how close this is to the customer, I think that's going to increase our standing within the organization because we truly then realize the link through to revenue.
Yeah. And if you're doing really good category management, the way it should be done, part of that is you're starting by saying, what is the need, but what is the customer aspiration here? You know, you're connecting through to the people in the organization that have those relationships with your end customer to be able to inform your category strategy. And I think just to build on the whole category management piece, coming back to the report, how does the C-suite see category management? Would you say the C-suite still sees it as a key enabler for procurement?
I see it in a transition time at the moment. I think it sees the potential of what it can do. I think a lot of the time organizations have become ingrained to expect an almost immediate ROI on putting in category management. And the reality is, because it's a strategy piece, the ROI goes from being a 12-month give me cost savings to actually it's a 3-5 year different way of measuring it because it's about reduction in risk or it's contribution to revenue or it's about how we've offset a whole bunch of stuff. We've met a bunch of legislative requirements or whatever, because there'll be a multitude of drivers that's within category management. So I think the business is still confused about its role in category management. And I think that's still quite coming true. I don't necessarily think that we've done a particularly great job about saying this is what category management is. It's a strategy tool. I think that's largely because most strategies end in sourcing. And so they're basically saying it's a segmentation tool. It's just a way to segment spend. And I think there's an education piece that needs to happen about what the value of that is. And I think technology's got a role to play in that to kind of show how you can put together a comprehensive category strategy that looks at all of the different subcategories. Because, you know, for probably, 20 years from 1999 to 2015, most organizations followed a very simple, similar strategy. which was supply-based consolidation.
Mm-hmm.
How do I bundle all the stuff together and have one throat to choke? Because it's a lot easier to manage one supplier. And you know what? The market always produces more suppliers than that, which is fine until it didn't. And it started slowing down. We had a conversation about this. I live in Australia. We didn't get impacted as badly by the GFC as the rest of the world for a number of reasons, largely to do with coal and selling it to China, to be completely honest with you. But there are other reasons. Iron ore was another reason as well. That's a separate issue. So I tracked the globalization slowdown since about 2015 in terms of the amount of global spend has been slowly trickling down from 2015. Big accelerant, obviously, because of COVID. And what I think that's done is it's shrunk the global supplier base completely. So you don't necessarily have that. Mm-hmm. And then I think with all the geopolitics that's coming on, you're now more likely to be doing business with more suppliers you've ever done before. And you're going to need to unbundle the things that were previously bundled.
Yeah.
Because those suppliers don't exist anymore. And you can't recreate that sole supplier in a geographical location that more suits where you're going as an organization.
And that's a key role of category management to be able to do that.
Gordon, when we've had CPOs on this show, they've often reflected on the fact that their executive teams are being asked to literally prioritize, and I hate using the word embracing AI, I prefer to use the term utilizing AI and digitization within procurement. Is this the kind of strategies that you're seeing? Are we racing to utilize AI? And then to Jonathan, how is that going to impact traditional quote-unquote methodologies like category management?
Are we racing to embrace AI? I think that we are wanting to do something with AI. I think it's still very use case centric. I think the adoption isn't as big as it is. I think there is still an amount of fear for two reasons. One, what does that mean for my teams? What does that mean for my people? Have I got talent to be able to do this kind of thing? And two, then there's fear around the data and the quality and the hallucinations. AI doesn't do math fantastically well right at the moment. It does lots of things really well, but ask it to calculate things, it can be better. And it will get better, and it will get better at an exponential rate. Do I see procurement teams, do I see businesses rushing to embrace AI and doing that? I think if I did, what I would see is organizations throwing away and unlearning, if you like, the processes that they've been using and going, no, we need to think about this from an AI mindset and how do we utilize AI to achieve the outcomes that we need. I still think at the moment, and this is one of the reasons why SAP is like, you know, redone an awful lot of procurement stuff to be AI native. That's what we think should happen. The organization should be AI native and think AI first, as opposed to bolting it on. And when you think about it within an existing process, you are bolting it on as opposed to ignoring your process and starting with AI. So once that happens, then we're embracing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think to how that will change things like category management, it's already beginning to change. If we think about the sort of trajectory today, we'd be used to doing category management using the traditional template approach, still how 95% of companies are doing it. But what we're doing with AI and technology is we're digitizing that process. That's the first step. And that's pretty much there within our Capella tool. There are other tools that do that. And the AI piece will then do two things. It starts as a bolt-on, but then it becomes the thing that powers it. Very similar to what you said, Gordon, because the AI is then the thing that's going and finding the data that is hard to get today and putting all that together and drawing out some unique insights and learning from that. So it will become more built around that AI functionality rather than it being a bolt-on. And so that evolution is already in play within our Capella tool. We're doing a lot of work on how we take the AI piece to the next level to be able to do that. And it will just eventually create this thing where the category management piece sits in the background. There'll still be a methodology there. There'll still be algorithms built around the original processes, but it's in the background. And you then need skilled practitioners that know category management, but they're not applying it. They're making sure the tool is working well in the organization and creating sourcing strategies, category strategies that then the business takes and they go and implement.
And now it's time for this week's Ask Jonathan.
And today's Ask Jonathan comes from Katrina Muller, who writes, "Dear Jonathan, thank you for your podcast on the risk of AI to make procurement extinct. I have downloaded the white paper you've written on this also. This made me stop and rethink my entire career. The organisation I work for does not see this coming. However, I'd like to understand what your advice would be to a procurement professional so I can position myself in the right way and have a career in procurement, or whatever we call it, in the next 10 years.
Brilliant. Thank you for downloading the paper, Katerina, as well. And we had Guy Strafford come on and talk about this on a recent podcast. The thing we've got to remember is that all the transactional stuff's going to get automated. All the non-routine stuff, there'll be new AI tools that'll create business self-serve systems. Procurement won't do any of that sort of stuff anymore. So all the transactional stuff, a lot of the supply management contract stuff, there won't be a need for procurement to do that stuff. So we've got to start thinking about what the strategic role of procurement is. And that's the only bit that's really going to survive and have a role in the future. So for a procurement professional now, there's two really important things to do. The first is you've got to be all over strategic principles of procurement, category management, SRM, how to negotiate strategically, sustainable procurement. All of those methods and tools and processes and understanding, that should be the thing that you're living and breathing. So you know all of the principles or the economic drivers behind how you do good procurement and the systems that power that. And that's really what you need to focus on. The second thing is be absolutely all over data and AI and the tech and live and breathe in that world. Understand how you can use tech and put tech together and be able to use AI for what the future will bring. Forget all the transactional stuff. Forget about being good at running RFPs because we're not going to be doing that stuff. Focus on being really good strategically and having really good data and AI skills.
Good. Practical answer there. Nice. If you've got a question for Jonathan, by all means, get in touch and here's how.
The fun fact. Contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com, or connect with us on LinkedIn. Search for The Procurement Show. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, building exceptional procurement and negotiation the world over.
I thought it was really interesting how, in its basic form, Gordon, you referred to the fact that AI quite often hallucinates, especially when it's being asked to execute numerical tasks. And you quite rightly said it's not very good at doing that. In my mind, that's a key part of what we're probably going to deploy, you know, data gathering, data analysis. So, Jonathan, are we moving towards it too quickly now? Are we going to find out the hard way that it actually will hallucinate on mass levels and we're going to experience a rebound before we've actually gone there?
Well, I think we're going to make some catastrophic mistakes. So what's scary here is how fast AI is moving. So hallucination today is actually an improvement that improves something beyond what humans do tomorrow. But one of the big challenges that we have today is there is this expectation that you can put enough information into ChatGPT to create a category strategy. It will produce something, but it's not necessarily going to be a category strategy that has learnt or been trained on all of the vast wisdom of applying category management, understanding a market and the geopolitical conditions at the time. So there's a long, long way to go here. So today we have these sort of black box solutions that produce something, but it is questionable how good that something is. 2 years, 5 years, actually they'll be brilliant. But it's all down to how the AI learns and how humans validate. You have to have humans working alongside the AI to produce the good results. And that's how you get around the hallucination issue.
I think there's two things just to jump on that point, and I agree with you, Jonathan. A good analogy I use is I have a car that has a self-driving capability. And when you pull the stick down twice without giving away the name of the brand of the car, the blue lines come on and it starts driving. A warning comes up and it says, keep your hands on the wheel.
Yeah.
That, I think, is a good analogy for where we are at the moment is procurement leaders, procurement practitioners, category managers should be keeping their hands on the wheel of what it's producing and validating, to your point. I think the second thing is we need to be prepared for, as you said, 2 years' time when it is an awful lot better, when it's made these mistakes and it's learned from these mistakes and it's been trained on all of this stuff. Because if we look at now and go, let's assume that it all works fantastically well and let's make sure that we've got the humans in the loop to ensure the validation piece comes in, then you don't need to change the process again once it works. You just need to change where the humans go in and what they actually do.
Yeah.
Because the key, as you were saying, is I was looking at something around, it was actually about solar panels. It was a category manager who's responsible for utilities with the prices going in with some utilities. They're going, we're looking to offset some of the rising prices of utilities by increasing the use of solar panels on our buildings. An alert came in that basically turned around and said, well, fantastic, but tariffs are impacting the location where you buy your solar panels from at the moment. That's through the contract. So you need to put something in place. It kind of looks at that and it suggests four or five different things that you could do. Suggests, well, you could run a sourcing exercise to look at this amount of quantity of spend and where you can get it from. And then it's looking at all of your other things that you've identified in that particular category. You've got some small business issues that you wanted to look at. You wanted to increase your diversity of your supply base. So you didn't want a single source. You wanted to make sure you did. On all those different things, and it kind of came up and created a strategy to go and buy this that you had to then look and go, yeah, actually, no, I'm pretty happy with that. And what we talked about earlier, create event. And it would create the event. It created the scenarios and it ran the event. It ran it. It did it. And wow. It came back and said, right, we've managed that. Here is our recommendation based on the criteria that you put in, based on the goals that you wanted. We think you should source from this company and this company, split like this and like this.
Wow.
It was done.
And that's a glimpse of where it goes. Every time I see a new AI tool, I saw one yesterday doing negotiation, and it was astonishing. And every time I see a well-trained AI tool where all the parameters have been put into it, and it then does things you don't expect it to do, you get a glimpse as to how powerful this stuff's going to be within a year, within 2 years.
I don't think we're talking about AI in 5 years' time.
It will be just part of what we do. We won't be talking about it. You're right.
We don't talk about emails and the internet anymore, do we?
No.
I once sat in a presentation, and it wasn't that long ago. It was just before the pandemic. And a large consultancy said, so the internet, we think it's going to be a really big thing. Have we suddenly morphed back to like 1995 or something? What's going on here?
Yeah, I think the wheel's going to catch on.
Do you think? Yeah.
Maybe fire too.
Environmental and sustainability. We haven't really mentioned that at all today.
Haven't.
Is that old news? Is that no longer a priority?
The research says that it's one of the top four strategic priorities for procurement for the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
What I will say is that every year that we've asked this question on what the strategic priorities are, and we ask the question, what's the 18-month priority list? What's the 5-year priority list? Sustainability always tops the 5-year priority list. It never stops the short-term priority list, which always makes me think is one of those things, well, when we deal with the current crisis, we'll get to it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, last year, we asked the question, what is it in your sustainability priorities that you care about? And there were three or four things. The number one thing was compliance for legislation as a driver of sustainability, which is interesting, right? Because there's another piece of research, not done by us, it was done by the University of Mannheim, I think it was. And it's a few years ago, but it said that people make a choice that when the cost of compliance is higher than the cost of non-compliance, they're not going to comply. But when the cost of compliance is lower than the cost of non-compliance, then I'll comply.
Yeah. I think that's fair.
Right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The second driver was waste reduction, which being in procurement just in time is a whole philosophy founded on the elimination of waste. There we go. I said it from Dobler and Burt, which the book is right here on my bookshelf. Mm-hmm. It founded on the elimination of waste. There we go. So it should not be new to procurement professionals to think about ways that they can reduce waste, either waste in process, but in this case, about waste in materials. How do we reduce the waste generation? Why do we reduce the waste generation? Because if we don't, it has a negative impact on the organization's bottom line because it's waste that you're throwing away. There's no benefit to it. Second thing, I'd say, goes back to cost. Third thing that they wanted to do is reduce carbon. And in some parts of the world, you've got a price on carbon. Well, not on all parts of the world. But what we know that carbon kind of contributes to is greenhouse gases and issues around climate. And we think about what that means. It means that what's been happening to our utility bills? Well, our utility bills have been going up. So if we reduce our carbon and reduce scope one and scope two, interestingly, we put scope one and scope two carbon, and then we separated scope three. Scope three was second bottom.
Mm.
And when I looked at this from an industry analysis, in every non-manufacturing industry, scope three was relatively high.
Yeah.
In every manufacturing industry, scope three was very, very low.
And is that because there isn't the legislation that compels companies to do that necessarily yet?
Well, I think it's more that in non-manufacturing, they don't have much of a scope one or a scope two. So if they're going to focus on reducing carbon, you've only got scope three to focus on.
Yeah.
Whereas when you're manufacturing, you've got a heck of a lot of scope one and scope two.
Yeah.
By reducing my scope one and scope two. And let's also be clear that when you're buying stuff that's been manufactured and you're looking at scope three, well, that's someone else's scope one and scope two.
Yeah. And just to clarify here, so scope three is all the emissions in your supply chain, scope one's all the emissions you produce in-house, and scope two are things like utilities and energy and heat that the organization buys in.
But by focusing on scope one and scope two, you're reducing your direct costs. And that, I think, is... So it's quite telling to see that all of the sustainability initiatives all come back to costs impacting your supply base, not necessarily to do with making the world a better place. I think that's somewhat of a byproduct.
So do you think that procurement has the right talent and skills? And does the C-suite see procurement investing in talent and skills within procurement?
So to answer your first question, a while ago, probably 10 years ago now, I wrote a piece with a friend of mine, Phil Eidson,
who you know.
And it was all about looking back at every single piece of procurement research that we could find since 2002. And the reason why we did that was to see the things that we said in 2002, were they still the same things that we're saying in 2016? And one of the constant themes was procurement leaders in 2002, procurement leaders in 2016 saying, we don't think that we have the necessary talent for where we want to take procurement. If I did the same thing now and looked at every report from 2016 to 2026, I'm pretty sure it would say the same thing.
Yeah, I agree.
So I don't think that is a new narrative around talent. I think the skills that organizations are looking for, and we asked this question this year, is AI proficiency in ethics? There's some sustainability pieces. There's worryingly a little bit of traditional procurement skills are quite high in certain areas and ahead of digital procurement skills, which was slightly concerning. The two biggest issues for me when I looked at the skills were how low curiosity and problem solving and change management were. To go to our start of our conversation that we had around what is category management and understanding that macro environment and thinking, what does that mean for my category? Well, that's curiosity and to a degree problem solving. And every time I talk to CPOs, say, oh, we absolutely want to look at that. It's a key thing we want to do. But when presented with a list of skills, which ones do you want? Curiosity, problem solving was second last. And change management was absolute last.
I wonder if it's because those are less tangible, less easy to understand. So they often get sort of pushed aside. But I absolutely agree. And the other one I'd add to that is that entrepreneurial ability that is often key to driving these sorts of breakthroughs. Our time is coming to a close, and I have one more question I really want to ask you, which is 5 years from now, what does procurement look like? What's the future of procurement?
I think the future of procurement is going to be very risk and resilience based. I don't think, if we look at the geopolitical thing now, I think it's going to take a long time to unpick if it ever gets unpicked. So I think we're going to be heavily, heavily focused on scenario planning. I think scenario planning as an output is going to be something that sits in every single category strategy and is the thing that probably drives most category strategies. So I think the future of procurement is around risk. I think it's about how we harness and use, and I don't like the word, but embrace AI and become AI native and think about things from an AI place first. Let's say, so definitely embracing AI, definitely thinking about scenario planning. If procurement is to thrive in the future, we've got to really be very, very clear about the connection of the categories that we're managing and the revenue for the organization.
Mm. So our time is coming even closer to a close. Mm-hmm. What's our top three takeaways?
There's a TV show called Ted Lasso, and the quote's a Walt Whitman quote. It's my top takeaway, if you like, is be curious.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, have you got any others you want to add to that, just so we keep the three in?
You know what? I'm just going to stay.
All right. Lovely. Okay.
Be curious.
At the time of recording, you're about to undertake a HYROX challenge. On behalf of all of us here, we wish you the very best for that.
Good
you're
luck
an
with
absolute
that.
Fool for trying it because that's not the easiest thing to do.
Oh, it's incredible.
I'm wearing a t-shirt that says that wasn't very data-driven of you. I think my decision to HYROX wasn't very data-driven, looking at some of my times at the moment. But hey, we'll see.
Yeah. Gordon Donovan, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us all the way from Melbourne in Australia. And it's been a pleasure to have you on the show. Thank you.
Thank you. It's been an absolute joy as well. Jonathan, Paul, have a great day.
You've been listening to The Procurement Show. Contact us by email, hello@theprocurementshow.com. Connect with us on LinkedIn, search for The Procurement Show, and visit us at theprocurementshow.com. You can also WhatsApp us on +44 7396 939933. The Procurement Show is brought to you by Positive Purchasing, transforming procurement with exceptional tools and advanced training. Produced in the UK by Fresh Air Studios. The Procurement Show is copyright Positive Purchasing, all rights reserved.
Report, Captain Bywell.
Sir, we've recovered one.
What? A Procleus?
Yes, sir.
Good work, Bywell. Where did you find it?
That was easy, sir. We looked at the companies with good strategic procurement. They all use Procleus. Look, I've got it here.
Quick, man. Open it up. Aha, it's got toolkits, category management, SRM, sustainable procurement, and look, red sheet negotiation.
Here, sir, an academy with a skills assessment and a virtual learning environment.
Great Scott! This thing has Capella too. It can create category strategies for you.
And Ruby, sir, the AI negotiation co-pilot.
Hello.
Bye, well, you'll get a medal for this.
Proclius, the AI-powered platform for strategic procurement. Search Proclius or visit positivepurchasing.com to find out more.